to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the third and final hour of tonight's live radio broadcast of the political cesspool. I'm your host, James Edwards. Joining me in studio for tonight's second and third hours, Winston Smith, co-hosting with me as we broadcast to you from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in downtown Memphis, Tennessee. Also, our newest affiliate station. There you go. Don't forget, AM 1600 WMQM also right here in Memphis. We've got Memphis covered, that's for sure, and we're going out to the AM and FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network as well. Simulcasting online, thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com, where you can find our broadcast archives should you happen to miss any of our live shows. If you're lucky this hour, we might talk about something other than Kobe Bryant. I know. But, you know, a lot of facets. It's an interesting story with a lot of, as they say in the Big Lebowski, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, a lot of what have yous. You got to look at the stuff that the national media is refusing to cover and, of course, uncover those salacious subplots as well, of which there are many in this story. Right, Winston?
Indeed.
Well, Winston, before we move on, as hard as it is from this train wreck or roadkill, as you call it, let's take a quick call. Let's hear from Tim. Tim, you're on the line.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
I don't know. Tell me. Good to have you again.
Well, hey, listen, a couple of things. There's a book that was written about 6 or 7 years ago called The Marketing of Evil. And it's by a gentleman by the name of David Kapelian.
Uh-huh.
He's editor at WorldNet Daily. It's politically correct in some ways, but it's also pretty illustrative in terms of the agenda of some of these people that are marketing things like homosexuality.
Right.
It's really true. This all really began, in my mind, with Bill Snyder. Bill Snyder had a gentleman on by the name of Quentin Quisp, and this is way back in the late 70s, who was a homosexual author. And, of course, you had Truman Capote and others, too. And this has gradually and gradually been marketed and pushed to a head. And now, you know, they're sort of pushing for acceptance of this, you know, of this lifestyle.
And, oh, yeah. Well, you know, they get an inch. They go for an inch further. They're never satisfied. And they will never be satisfied. You know, why is the NAACP even in existence anymore? They have preferential treatment and everything now, and hirings and scholarships. I mean, what are they there
for?
Well,
somebody, they got to have a job.
Well, that's right, but I'm just saying there's no satisfying
It's indoor work with no heavy lifting.
Minority malcontents, and now as you said, and that sounds like a very interesting book. I appreciate you for bringing it to our attention. You know, that's the homosexuals say, listen, you know, they got their hand in the cookie jar. We'll do it too, and they're following the blueprint, and they're following it pretty effectively.
Well, and one other point here, and when you mentioned, of course, the owner of the basketball team who was Jewish.
Well, it was the NBA commissioner that I was referring to.
Commissioner. You know, he referred to himself as an internationalist. If you'll listen to Barbara Spector, who is a Jewish, she's in charge of a group called Paideia. That is, and it's a pro-immigration group. And she just comes out and says it. She said that the role of the Jew is to be the mediator in a multicultural society. And that is exactly what this gentleman, this commissioner, was doing. He was being the mediator. He was setting the terms of this thing. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I actually have to give her credit for being honest there. It does seem, and, you know, again, as Keith Alexander always says, what is the problem with Jews? And it just so happens, and we have voting statistics to back us up on this, Jews happen to be the most liberal segment of our population, and
the most powerful.
And the most powerful. And you put those two together, and you've got something very dangerous if you come from a traditional paleoconservative point of view, and that's why we oppose them. You know, I know a lot of people would have you believe that we oppose them just because of the fact they were born Jewish, and that's silly. And there are, you know, obviously, we've had several Jewish guests on the program. There's obviously some Jews that are out there that are fighting for the right things. But it just seems as though it's an uncanny phenomenon that people in position of powers, whether it be in Hollywood movie studios or, you know, the commissioner of the NBA in this instance, or, you know, government advisors, they all seem to have a common denominator when compared and contrasted with their portion of the population, their percentage of the population. It's something that needs to be looked at, you know, openly, honestly. And that's what we try to do here. But thanks so much for the call, Tim. You really added some depth and perspective to the program.
All right, man.
We appreciate it. Well, Winston, before we move on to the next thing that I have on the agenda, and, man, you know, this show's really going by. Would you like to address anything that Tim said?
Well, I would point out that it shouldn't surprise us that the commissioner of the NBA, who, as you said, is a Jew, why he should come out so strongly against what Kobe Bryant said and what he did, we know for a fact that it's certain Jewish advocacy organizations that are at the forefront of pushing the homosexual agenda. It's the ADL that is pushing the homosexual agenda in this country today. They're the ones who are behind all the gay marriage laws. So it shouldn't surprise us that the Jewish commissioner of the NBA would come out as he did, and therefore it shouldn't surprise us if the NBA now becomes the ground zero for the latest round of homosexual indoctrination of the country. Again, I'll say I don't know why any red-blooded American male will want to watch basketball now. If they are so interested in pandering to homosexuals, well, let homosexuals pay those enormous salaries. They shouldn't be supporting the NBA now.
Well, you know, and this isn't the only reason they shouldn't, even though I'm guilty. I'm a sports fan. I watch it. I have a brain and it works, and I can filter out a lot of the heinous stuff, and I don't let political correctness get the best of me, but I like basketball. Now, granted, I don't like the fact that there's a caste system in play in professional sports, and, you know, Don Wassel talks about that, but I've played the game. I enjoy watching the game for itself, for the game, but, you know, all the other stuff, the politics of the NBA is just as corrupt and filthy as you would imagine. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if they changed the classic Jerry West logo, which is wet, red, white, and blue, and you know, make it the rainbow color. And how do homosexuals claim the rainbow anyway? But that's neither here nor there. But I will tell you this before we go to our first break of the third hour, or final hour tonight. Ashley Judd's in trouble too. She's not as in big a trouble as Kobe Bryant is, but Ashley Judd. Look, the politically correct police are really working overtime this week, folks. First, they had to, as I mentioned, reluctantly drag Kobe Bryant over the coals. Now it's radical feminist Ashley Judd's turn. What did she do? We'll find out right after the break. Stay tuned.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the program. Winston Smith here co-hosting with me in studio. I'm James Edwards. Winston is over at his desk. I'm across the glass at mine. Winston, you just emailed me from across the room. And as people know, Winston also contributes at our Political Cesspool blog. We neatly title each of his under the category The Files of Winston Smith. We put his name in the title so you don't confuse his writing for mine, or vice versa.
God forbid that happen.
Right. Well, I wouldn't want to. I wouldn't want people to think poorly of your work, Winston, is all. And so, anyway, you just emailed me revised blog item. So, should I delete the one you sent me at 4 and go with the one you just sent me?
Yeah, I found some. Rhetorical errors in the first version.
Okay. All right. Well, forgive us, folks, for a little house cleaning there, but I couldn't wait till the commercial and just ask him off the air. I figured I would just give you an illustration of what's going on here. But anyway,
kind of pull back the curtain and see the man behind it.
Getting back to Ashley Judd. Now, we all know that Ashley Judd is a Hollywood actress, very famous, of the Judd family of country music fame. And she's also a radical feminist. Now, the two things that Ashley Judd has going for her is that she's gorgeous and she's a Southerner, but that doesn't change the fact that she's a liberal. But even she, the feminist that she is, has also been sniped by the cultural Marxists this week. But what did she do? We know what Kobe Bryant did. He offended sodomites. What did she do? She offended rappers. Rappers. Black rappers. Gangster rappers. Here's the story. After being criticized for attacking rap and hip-hop in her new book, All That Is Bitter and Sweet, Ashley Judd is extending an olive branch along with a few points of clarification. The backlash began after an excerpt from her book depicted the actress lobbying harsh words at the rap and hip-hop genres, as well as artists Snoop Dogg and P. Diddy. I mean, just names like that just scream respect. What? I don't know. While speaking about an AIDS awareness program she works with, Judd writes, quote, along with other performers, Youth AIDS was supported by rap and hip-hop artists like Snoop Dogg and P. Diddy to spread the message, who? She writes, those names were a red flag. Judd continued, as far as I'm concerned, most rap and hip-hop, with its rape culture and insanely abrasive lyrics and depictions of girls and women as hoes, is the contemporary soundtrack of misogyny. Now, that's what she said, and she got the politically correct treatment. She was condemned and forced to apologize. Apologizing, bending a knee before rappers? You know, give me a break, Winston. But, and all she said was that, she didn't want people like that associated with her charity, as liberal as it is, because, well, they're trash, and they are. But, you can't even offend a black gangster rapper now, Winston.
James, I always thought hip-hoppers were supposed to be, like, real tough guys. You know, they're supposed to be this thug culture of theirs. And now they've been mightily offended by this petite, sweet-looking woman. How can they pretend to be so tough when their feelings are so easily hurt by this woman?
Oh, that is an excellent point. Even I didn't look at it from that angle. I really appreciate you for bringing that perspective to the program, because yes, you're right. And by the way, folks, if you haven't visited our website this week, I'll give you one reason and one reason alone to do so now: thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go to the Ashley Judd article entitled "Ashley Judd Offends Black Rappers." You know, one of the things we're doing here lately is adding illustrations and videos to each blog article as, a compliment to the piece. And, I got a nice picture there of Ashley Judd in a stunning blue dress. If for no other reason alone, you should check the website out for that. But Winston, you got it right. I mean, the media portrays gangster rappers as the epitome of the alpha male in this day and age, and yet their feelings get hurt from, petite Ashley Judd. And
I don't know where she got the
extent,
power from.
To the extent,
I want some of that.
To the extent that, they have to, make a beef of it in the media.
Well, James,
how tough is that?
Look at what she said. As far as I'm concerned, most rap and hip hop music, with its rape culture and insanely abusive lyrics and depiction of girls and women as hoes, is the contemporary soundtrack of misogyny. Now, she's right. What she said was absolutely right. And now she has to apologize for it? You know, James, I've been telling people something, and I'll say it here on the show. People will forgive you when you're wrong, but they will never, ever forgive you when you're right.
It's kind of like I like to say, people will forgive you when you rape a white girl, but they will never forgive you if you offend a homosexual. It's kind of the same thing, but
yeah.
in the context of Kobe Bryant. But Ashley Judd did put a little barb in her groveling apology, and I say groveling because here's what she wrote. I fully capitulate to your rightness and humbly offer my heartfelt amends for not having been able to see the fault in my writing. That's about as bad as it gets, okay? All for saying that, you know, black rappers promote an offensive culture. But she did, in the end, write that my equivalent genres as an Appalachian, an oppressed and ridiculed people, would be mountain music and bluegrass. Those genres tell the history, struggles, grief, soul, faith, and culture of my people. In imagining how I would feel if someone made negative generalizations about that music, I am deeply remorseful about what I said. She recognizes that she has a people.
Fun of that kind of music.
And that people is our people.
Yeah.
So I'll give her that.
People, the music of our people gets ridiculed all the time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just watch Deliverance. And you know, they'll tell you what you know, that's the depiction of Appalachians. And, you know, but here's the thing. And you're right. Quite right. It gets ridiculed every day. It's the butt of jokes. You know, mountain people, hillbillies, they call them. Now, when's the last time a black rapper apologized to an Appalachian, a group of whites who are marked on a daily basis? You know, black thugs like Kanye West can go out and drape himself in our flag, the Christian flag, the St. Andrew's cross, the Confederate battle flag, drape himself in that on stage in a live television performance, quote-unquote, performance, and set it on fire and stomp on it. You know, they can do that on stage, on national television, no less, and it's all well and good, no apology needed, but criticize rap? Well, just ask Ashley Judd what happens. You know, and that is a pretty powerful contrast because she said nothing that could have offended these thugs the way it offended millions of people to see the Confederate flag being burned.
James, it wouldn't surprise me if she just goes all out and she's going to appear in the next video by either Snoop Dogg or P. Diddy or both. As she's going to appear as the token white hoe. I mean, she will have to do something more than just say, "I'm sorry, you know, I should have put myself in your shoes, and before I said those words, I should have asked myself how I would feel if somebody insulted my people and my music."
Yeah, but they insult her people every day, and that's the point. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I will give her this. There, you know, in the middle of all of her drivel, there were a couple of really good points. I mean, she really nailed rap for what it was, so she's right on that. And I appreciate the fact that she recognizes she's an Appalachian, refers to those as her people. That's healthy. So maybe there's a kernel there that we can cultivate. I don't know. Read more about Ashley Judd at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We'll be back right after this.
Political Cesspool guys, we'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody, moving right along tonight. James Edwards and Winston Smith. And Winston, before we take a call from Florida, I want to give you the opportunity to kind of put the exclamation point on the Ashley Judd story.
All right. I was looking at the comments to your posting on Ashley Judd, James, and the last one is really quite good. It's from a poster who goes by the name of Adam Freeman, and he says, read her last sentence, and I'm going to do that now, of her apology. The last sentence of her apology says, I am deeply remorseful that anything I may have said in the book, All That Is Bitter and Sweet, would hurt adherents of genres that represent their culture. Now, that's kind of sly, I think, because she mentions the genres that represent their culture, but how has she described their culture? Well, earlier she said it was a rape culture and insanely abusive lyrics and depictions of girls and women posed. So she didn't apologize for characterizing rap culture. She apologized that they were offended, which is really no apology. So maybe there's something to it.
That was a pretty interesting observation. Let's hope that she was that cunning. Who knows? But again, you can read the story for yourself and look at a pretty cute picture of Ashley at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Okay, let's take a quick call. Rocky in Florida, welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going, man?
Man, we're hanging in here. Another battle, another victory on the cesspool tonight.
True. I got to say, I'm listening to the feed through the website, and there's definitely a little bit of a delay. I was quite surprised when I called in the first time.
All right. Yeah, people, a little behind-the-scenes way the radio works. If you're listening to us on one of the AM affiliates, you get it real time. If you're listening to us on the Internet, there is a delay. It's not too substantial, but it's noticeable. You know, varies between 30 seconds and a minute and a half, 2 minutes sometimes. It's just the way it is.
True. Anyways, on a not important note tonight, it's funny, I remember one of your really old blogs. It's quite old. It might have been from a year ago. You mentioned that you were a Portland Trailblazers fan, right?
That's right.
I remember you did mention one of their players. It was Aretas Sabonis, one of the best players never to play in the league, almost.
Yeah, and in fact, I actually just put a post up a couple of weeks ago, now that you mention it, and mentioning that Aretas Sabonis had gotten inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame, and took a couple of barbs at, you know, contemporary athletes that are being promoted by the NBA. So, yes indeed, I remember his game well.
Yeah, it's unfortunate he didn't join the league until he was in his mid-30s, though, when he was way past his prime, I remember. You know, as the saying goes, it's not my Aretas or your Aretas, it's our Aretas.
That's right. I remember that. I certainly remember that. Yeah, I mean, yep. If you ever watched his game, this was a guy, a hulk of a man, you know, 7'3", 300 pounds, and could shoot three-pointers, you know, better than any guard, could pass better than any guard. I mean, he could do behind it. He looked like he, you know, had the eyes in the back of his head. He did pass. It was so good. It just defies – it's like, yeah, a magician's trick. He was so skilled. Now, he was hobbled by a lot of injuries by the time he got over to America. He played in Russia and in Eastern Europe for a long, long time. Came over here in his early 30s and still was a dominant center in the NBA, but, you know, just a shell of what he used to be. Many people say he was the best center of all time. And, of course, he was a European, and which is why, you know, you probably hadn't heard his name.
True. I think you also mentioned there was one guy they had called Chris Dudley. Talent-wise, he was much lower, you know, but toughness-wise, he was very good. Plus, he had diabetes, but he played for quite a few seasons, I remember, in the league.
Good defender, good rebounder. The hardest working man in basketball, they called him. He laced up his steel-toed sneakers every night and, you know, went out there and, you know, did what he could do.
Yeah, I remember, I think, I might be wrong, but I think he ran for governor of Oregon last year, didn't he?
Yeah, we covered that. He almost won. You know, he was a Republican candidate for governor. Chris Dudley was a graduate of Yale University and, you know, went on to have a long career in the NBA. He played with Aretas Sabonis for a couple of seasons there for Portland. But, yeah, he ran for governor of Oregon last year and was actually leading the race when the polls closed. And then, you know, as it always seems to turn out in these closed races, the Democratic boxes came in late and his opponent won. But for a Republican to even contend in Oregon is miraculous on a statewide race. And like I said, he did. I mean, he lost by, you know, less than a percent.
Right. Well, anyways, I need to get out of this habit of bringing up old posts. For some reason, I keep bringing.
Hey, no, you know, that's what they're there for, and I'm glad you did. Yeah, by the way, you know, listen, especially for the new fans of the show, you know, go to the website. You're not limited to only reading the top 10 posts that are featured at any given time.
Right.
You can go back page after page after page for years and review hundreds and hundreds of articles that we featured on our website. And you can, of course, also go back to 2005 and listen to every radio show we've done since that time, you know, almost since the very inception of the program itself. So, you know,
lots of treasures
there, both in print and audio version at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And Rocky, thanks for bringing up all these great points and, you know, bringing up a little sports related stuff to change the pace tonight.
Last thing, I don't want to have too much time. What was I about to say? I forgot. You know, I was reading your blog, and it just seems like in the past recent months and recent years, some of these stories, you know how you tag your stories sometimes with the title, I am not making this up?
Right, yeah, that's one of our, categories.
It seems like I'm seeing way more of those recently. You know, like some of these stories are not even believable, but they, some of the stuff is just, it'd be funny if it wasn't so sad and ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, and then here we are, the only people covering it, you know, so on many of these cases. Yeah, there's some of them, they're all pretty outrageous.
Yeah.
But some of them make the outrageous ones look normal.
The most outrageous one by far was the Otis Mathis one. The guy who was illiterate, you know, in Detroit, but he wanted his job back. And he tried to say he made a mistake because he was a young man at 55 years old.
I remember that. I had to think for a minute, you know. But yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, because he was a young man at 55. You know, they should give him another chance. I remember that. That was quite a while ago. That's an oldie there.
And he didn't know better than to not expose himself in public, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's right, yeah. You know, folks, Rocky really, really, you know, dusting the cobwebs off my brain here tonight, bringing up some of these older posts there on our website. But that's what they're there for. We encourage you to go and browse through them and indulge yourself, immerse yourself in it. What it was is a black guy in Detroit, 55 years old, running around naked and, you know, got arrested for it. And he said, well, I'm a young man. What do you want? I made a mistake. I'm young and foolish, 55.
Right. Or the one with Hank Johnson where he said Guam was going to tip over.
Yeah, we have put that up again. All right, yeah, this is a United States congressman. United States congressman. I mean, this isn't just some slouch. I mean, you know, not to say that they're better than us. You know, in almost any standard of measurement, they're lower than us. But you would expect them at least to have some semblance of intelligence. I mean, after all, they're sitting in one of the highest elected seats in the world, for that matter. And he's interviewing this admiral, and he was asking the admiral if he were concerned about the U.S. military's deployment of troops on the island of Guam, because he thought that if you put too many people on one side of the island, it would cause it to capsize like a boat. Or, you know, canoe or something. This is, you got to take this stuff seriously. That was definitely one in the I'm not making this up category there at the blog. Well, folks, check it out for yourself, thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's all there. Rocky, listen, buddy, I appreciate the call. We got to move on, but we do thank you.
Thank you, man.
All right, buddy. Rocky in Florida, ringing the cowbell tonight, Winston.
That was good to listen to. I remember a lot of those old posts. There's some good stuff there. I like to browse them occasionally just to see how my thinking has evolved.
Yeah, it's just, you know, what can we say? We can't pat ourselves on the back enough. You know, I'll keep doing it if you want me to. But I tell you one one blog that was just put up today, as a matter of fact. Well, it was yesterday. Winston Smith. This is one of our most recent blog entries. Winston was calling for the O.J. Simpson jury. Crystal Mangum, the Duke lacrosse liar, the Duke lacrosse rape hoaxes, is being charged with murder. Murder. We got to take a break. We'll tell you more about it right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
You got to go check out Winston's commentary on the Crystal Mangum murder indictment, arrest, whatever. Check it. ThePoliticalCesspool.org, but don't forget that April is Confederate History Month, and the Political Cesspool radio program is the official show of Confederate History Month 2011. And with that being said, Keith Alexander covered it a little bit at the top of the, rather at the bottom of the first hour, I should say. We have a couple of letters featured at our website this week that we think are particularly moving. And I'd like for Winston to share those with you, if he would. Winston?
Thanks, James. But I'd like to say first that if you listeners do go to the blog and you read the article on Crystal Mangum, be sure to be ready to go directly to the Ashley Judd article thereafter, because James posted a picture of Crystal Mangum on there, and after seeing her, you are definitely going to need to look at Ashley Judd.
That's a good point. That is a good, yeah. And look at the two, and just compare them, and I don't know, just have a little fun with that, Winston.
Yeah. All right. On June 3rd, 1864, Robert Audrey of Company B in the 111th Illinois Infantry mailed a letter to his father describing some recent action his unit had seen, and he writes this: "Dear Father, I take pen in hand to let you know that I am well. We are encamped near Dallas, Georgia, where we found the enemy in force on the 26th instant. The 111th was in the front line of the breastworks, and we drew hot fire from the Rebs until about 4 o'clock, when the enemy viciously charged our works. We poured hot fire into their ranks, and several times their lines broke, but they rallied again and came on with guns blazing and flags waving. They fought like demons, and we cut them down like dogs. Many dead and dying Secesh fell prisoner. I saw 3 or 4 dead rebel women in the heap of bodies. All had been shot down during the final rebel charge upon our works. One Secesh woman charged to within several rods of our works, waving the traitor flag and screaming vulgarities at us. She was shot 3 times, but still she came. She was finally killed by 2 shots fired almost simultaneously by our boys. Another she-devil shot her way to our breastworks with 2 large revolvers, dealing death to all in her path. She was shot several times with no apparent effect. When she ran out of ammunition, she pulled out the largest pig sticker I've ever seen. It must have been 18 inches in the blade. When the corporal tried to shoot her, she kicked him in the face, smashing it quite severely. Then she stabbed 3 boys and was about to decapitate a 4th when the lieutenant killed her. Without a doubt, this gal inflicted more damage to our line than any other Reb. If Bobby Lee were to field a brigade of such fighters, I think that the Union prospects would be very gloomy indeed, for it would be hard to equal their ferocity and pluck." And then he describes their losses. But, James, that woman, well, what can you say? That's Southern womanhood for you. Not long ago, I posted a blog item a paragraph from, I can't remember the author's name. She was a Southern writer, and she wrote a book, Devota, in which the woman described being so proud of her femininity and so proud of being a well-heeled Southern woman. But I compare those two, and really, I find that they're the same. Southern women, there's something about them. They can be as tender and soft one minute, and the next minute, if you insult them wrong, if you insult them or their people, they're ready to take you out.
Yeah, when you think of Southern belles, you think of the classic feminine, demure, you know, the epitome of a lady, the personification of a woman. That's what I think of when I think of a Southern woman. But at the same time, a part of being Southern is a realization that there is something different about us, or something about our culture, and when that comes under attack, well, They can also take on the role that this woman did, obviously, in the letter written by that Union soldier. But if you thought that letter was good, the last thing we'll leave you with tonight was a letter written by the state comptroller in Florida in the 1930s. It was a letter that accompanied a pension check that was being sent from the state of Florida to the widow of a Confederate veteran. And I tell you, this is a very, very stirring letter. Keep in mind, folks, that this is being written by a very influential state government employee.
Now, James, this letter was sent from the state of Florida's comptroller's office in Tallahassee to Mrs. Sarah E. McGahey in Tampa. And he writes to Ms. McGahey, "Dear friend, I consider it quite fortunate on my part in being selected as the official charged with the responsibility of mailing you the enclosed pension check. It is a rare privilege and a pleasure to forward you this token of appreciation of the great state of Florida. I sincerely wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas and a surprisingly Happy New Year. Personally, I feel the debt of gratitude owing you by the Commonwealth of this state cannot be estimated in material wealth and therefore cannot be composed by mere payment of money. It is a liability that cannot be expressed in dollars, but it can be enshrined in the sacred archives of tradition. And by teaching the succeeding generation that by your actions, experience, and devotion to a sacred principle, you have proved that God does not force us into deep water to drown us, but to cleanse us. And that adversity is the trial of principle without which one hardly knows whether or not he is honest, unless, like those who fought for the lost cause, he is sorely tried, smelted, polished, and glorified in the furnace of our tribulation. If we remain true to our ideals and steadfast to our principles, as exemplified by those who follow the stars and bars, we are reminded that honor is likened to certain herbs and flowers. They send forth their most delightful odors only after they have been crushed and broken. Therefore, we should, all of us, profit from the experience and example of you brave souls who have conquered discouragement and despair and have, Phoenix-like, risen from the dead ashes of destitution and wants to the heights of honor, peace, and tranquility. May that one in whose honor we observe Christmas comfort and keep you. Very sincerely, J. M. Lee, Comptroller." And we'd like to thank Political Cesspool listener Stephen McGahey for bringing this stirring letter to our attention.
Yeah, you know, Winston, that was a letter written by, as you mentioned, the state comptroller of Florida. He honors, pays just beautiful tribute to the South, and honors God and Christmas in his letter. First of all, could you imagine that passing the lips of any elected official today? And secondly, what happened to the art of writing? I mean, I know they're too busy, you know, teaching about Frederick Douglass and homosexuality in schools to bother with literature and things like that. But, I mean, you know, this was just a normal guy writing a letter. This wasn't a paid speechwriter. The paid speechwriters can't even write as beautifully and as eloquently as that anymore.
But, James, back then, that was the norm. Everybody knew how to write like that. Everybody who was at least minimally educated, they knew how to write with that kind of eloquence.
It just flows off the lips as you read it. It's truly an art form.
It is. If you don't want to read this letter, or if you don't have any attachment to this letter for the tender and beautiful sentiment it expresses, you should look at it and learn from it. Learn how to write a good letter, because this is a, you know, pardon my language, but this is a damn fine letter. This is the way it should be done.
Well, and Winston, obviously, with your literary prowess, you certainly appreciate this as much as I do. But, folks, again, it is Confederate History Month. We ask you to read this letter and actually read it to your children. Share it with your family. And in doing so, and while doing so, remind them of all that is glorious and honorable about the legacy of the Confederate States of America as we continue to celebrate Confederate History Month here on the Political Cesspool radio program and that celebration will continue next week with more special guests and more commentary on Southern heritage and culture. It's been a very good show tonight. I covered a lot of ground and quite honored to have you as part of our audience this evening. Keep in mind, folks, to consider supporting our work if you appreciate the show. We are listener supported. And you can do so at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Winston, it's been a good time tonight.
It has been. And I just want to say again, as I read the comments to the blog postings, we have the greatest audience in the world, the most thoughtful, the most well-meaning, and we appreciate every one of you. It would be a much harder task were it not for our listeners giving us the support and encouragement that they do.
Winston, I couldn't have said it better myself, and I can't say any more because we're out of time. On behalf of Winston Smith, Keith Alexander, Eddie DeBombadil Miller, and Jill Rowland, I'm James Edwards. We'll see you next week, everybody. God bless you.
Go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.